Aleph Sivan, Monday the 8th of June, Rabbi David Kaplan, Meraglim and Motivation.
Good morning. There's an expression in America, I don't know, maybe used in English. There's an expression, you could run but you can't hide. You know, Rabdudi caught me. You could run, but you can't hide. I'll get louder. It'll get louder as things. Okay. So Rabdudi caught me and got me in Israel already. For the ongoing arrangement. So I want to speak a little bit about the Meraglim and try to understand a little bit what was really going on here. The first question obviously is, where did they go wrong? When they left, they were Chazal say they were tzaddikim. So one of the explanations, or Moshe Feinstein itself says in Drash Moshe, that the Meraglim, they didn't want to go. In the Midbar, they were under what's called Hanhaga Nisis. Hanhaga Nisis means, you know, it's a miracle existence. You're getting the mun is coming down, the water is coming up, exactly the opposite of where food comes from. Where usually water comes down, food comes up. And they're living a miraculous existence where the Parnassa is coming from a source that you know, it's just there. You know, it's just there. It's like a wife takes her husband's credit card. It's just there. You know, it's a miraculous existence. And so the Meraglim did not want to go from Hanhaga Nisis to Hanhaga Tivis, to go into Eretz Yisrael, and now what's called Hanhaga Tivis. You have to work the soil, you have to work the land. The Rosh Yeshiva of the Neil Airfield Shlita, he said that part of their cheshbon is that if you work the land in Eretz Yisrael, you have to sit and work the land, then you're going to take time off your Torah learning. That was also a concern. In the Midbar, all you have to do is sit and learn all day, and then you go into Eretz Yisrael, and now you're going to have to work agriculturally, and it's going to take time off of Torah learning. But Rav Moshe Feinstein says that it was a cheshbon of not wanting to go under. So what's wrong with the cheshbon? What's wrong with the cheshbon is, number one, you should trust. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu says do it, just do it. Don't make cheshbon. It's number one. But number two, there's a realization that Hanhaga Tivis, the natural running of the world, is also under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashgacha. It's only disguised. And a person has to know, there's a couple in Eretz Yisrael, the Thursday night, they didn't have any money. And the wife said to the husband, you know, what are we going to do? We need money. And the husband was already gemacht out. In Israel, a gemach is where you take a free loan. In Israel, proper ishtadlus is finding a gemach. And he couldn't even find the gemach to go to. So I had a guy once told me. He said he needed money or something. He said, Baruch Hashem, I had siyata d'shmaya. I found a gemach that would lend me money. That's what the guy said to me. So this couple, they didn't have money. Thursday night, so also they're sitting there to figure out what to do. The husband says, I'll have to make some more shtadlus. I'll have to go to work. Just then they hear a shattering glass. The back room, they go running in. A thief broke into the house. He pulls out a gun. He says, both of you get on the floor. Both of you get on the floor. It was in the old city of Yerushalayim. It says, both of you get on the floor. They're lying on the floor. The husband says to him, if you're looking for money, you're in the wrong place. So the thief says, well, I'm going to decide. And he says, you better not move. And he pulls out a gun, and they're lying on the floor. He goes around the dira. He comes back to them. He reaches his hand in his pocket. He pulls out a wad of bills. He says, hey, buddy, you need this more than I do. And he throws the money at him, and he goes out the window. So that's what's called Hanhaga Tivis. There's nothing here that was lamala mina teva. But, you know, if somebody would say, well, I'm going to make ishtadlus, what are you going to do? We're going to leave our back window open. That doesn't work. That's not ishtadlus. But a person has to know that even teva is obviously in the hands of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Number one, number two, I would tell you a maysa. I heard this from an Adam Godel. It's hard to believe, and if it wouldn't been that I heard it, it was shame. This Adam Godel, I wouldn't believe it at all. But sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. I might have mentioned this once here. There was a group of Kashrus Mashgichim that went to Japan. When they got to Japan, it was a long flight, and they were jet-lagged, and they get to the counter in Japan, they have to make a connecting flight. When they get to the counter, the lady at the counter says to them, and she says to them in broken English that they have to pay another $200 for the connecting flight. So they started, they got upset with her. They said, no, the ticket goes all the way through, we don't have to add any money. And she said, yes, you do. Now, then they started arguing, and she turned to her colleague at the counter, and then she cursed them in Japanese. So they were tired and they were jet lagged. They're upset at being cursed. You have to be a gong to know that somebody just cursed you. And they were upset. So one of them turns to the other one and he mutters under his breath. He points to the two ladies there. He points under breath. He says, "Shiyamusu misa mishune," which literally, yeah, more or less means may they die a painful death. You know, all right, maybe he shouldn't have said it. He was tired. Whatever. He said it. That's the mice. He said it. So she says to him in broken English. She points. She says, "Go to office." So there's an office at the end of the hallway. So he walks down to the office and he knocks on the door and he hears a voice in fluent. They come in. They walk in. There's a Japanese colonel sitting behind the desk. And he says, "What seems to be the problem?" They said, "Well, we bought this ticket. It's supposed to go all the way through. And they're not, she's giving us a hard time." So he takes the ticket. He looks it over. He takes out his pen. He initials. He says, "You can get on the plane." What happened? It turned out his name was Shiyamusu Misamshune. And when they said, Shiyamusu Misamshune, she got nervous. She thought they had protection with the colonel. So she sent them to the girl. She got nervous. So, you know, maybe that is Lamalaminatev. I don't know, you know. So somebody once said to me, "Come on, is that story true? Is that story really true?" I said to them, "Listen, if it's not true, I would love to meet the person who made it up. Whoever made that up, definitely somebody I'd like to have as a friend." Anybody? So the flaw over here was that the Meraglin, they wanted to stay under the direct Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a gewaldic thing. We have to realize that you're always under Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number one. Number two, Parshim asks Moshe Rabbeinu, he says a tefillah for Yoshua, Vayikra Moshe LaHoshea Binun Yoshua. So Parshim asks, why was he so worried, dafka, about Yoshua? Moshe Rabbeinu was worried about Yoshua. Why was he worried about anybody? Why was he worried about Kalev? Why was he worried about Kalev, first of all? And why is he worried about Yoshua? So Kalev, I was once thinking to myself, perhaps we could say he's not worried about Kalev, because Rashi at the very beginning says, Lama nismecha parshas Meraglin and parshas Miriam. Why wasn't this parsha put by parsha? Why is right juxtaposed to the parsha Miriam? Lefi shiloksa al iske diva shidibu bechel. She spoke about her brother Moshe. Virushoy me'alalu ro'u v'lalokhu musar. They saw it. They didn't take musar. Now, what was the musar? They should have noticed. That's what happens when you speak Lashon Hara. Aber Kalev is different. Chazal say Kalev was married to Miriam. So if anybody knew the ramifications of speaking a Lashon Hara that a wife is put outside the machaneh for 7 days, Kalev is the one who knows it more than anybody else. There's a difference between seeing the punishment and experiencing the punishment. Kalev ate tuna fish for 7 days. His wife wasn't home. He knows what it's like. What it's like when the wife is outside. He made the Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have to be worried about Kalev. Kalev, I don't have to worry about Kalev. He knows firsthand what happens when the person speaks like, for sure. What about Yeshua? So, there are several approaches among the Meforshim. What happened to Yeshua? What was Moshe Rabbeinu worried about Yeshua? First of all, Rav Hirsch says that this wasn't a tefillah. Rashi, the part Rashi brings the Chazal, that a Kol Yoshiacha Me'atzes Rebegala. Rav Hirsch says that this was a message to all the Meraglim. This was not a special tefillah just for Yoshua. It says, Vayikra Moshe leHoshea binun Yehoshua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he turns the name from Hoshea, past tense or present tense, Yehoshua will deliver you. That means it's a message to all the Meraglim. Moshe Rabbeinu takes the name of Yoshua, and he's saying to all the Meraglim, Yehoshua, the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who has been Moshiach you up until now, he will be Moshiach you in the future. It's a message to all the Meraglim. But according to the Chazal, that it is specifically a tefillah on Yoshua. So what is Moshe Rabbeinu, what's Moshe Rabbeinu concerned about? So, there was the Satmar Rebbe, Satmar Rebbe Yoel from Satmar, everybody knows was a very wise man. And he once had a group of Askanim came to him. There was some sort of project. They were building a big project. So the Askanim came to Rebbe Yoel. They wanted money. They wanted money for this, money for that. So Rebbe Yoel said to them, "How much money is it?" So they told him the amount of money. So Rebbe Yoel said to them, "And how much money is it for the Askanim?" So he said, "For Askanim, no. We're L'shem Shemayim." So Rabbi Yoel said, "L'shem Shemayim, that for sure I can't afford. If it's L'shem Shemayim, that's going to cost me more than anything else." Sometimes a person does something L'shem Shemayim. That's what a person. It can be very dangerous when a person is L'shem Shemayim. What did Yoshua hear? Yeshua heard, everybody heard, according to the Mefarshim, everybody heard the Nevuah of Eldad Umedad. What did Eldad Umedad say? Moshe Meis, Yeshua Machnisim La'aretz. Moshe's going to die. Yeshua's going to bring him into Eretz Yisrael. So Yeshua, now Moshe Rabbeinu is worried. He knows how much his Talmud loves him. And he's worried that Yeshua is going to turn this into a mitzvah. If I could keep Klal Yisrael out of me, out of Eretz Yisrael, the Rebbe is not going to die. If I could keep Klal Yisrael out of Eretz Yisrael, the Rebbe is going to live longer. That's a very dangerous thing. When it turns into a mitzvah, that's why the Meraglim themselves, Chazal say, based on the Zohar, their motivation was that they felt they would lose their positions when they go into Eretz Yisrael. Not clear why they would lose the positions, but certainly they were concerned about it at a minimum. Once told me the pshat is, the lav dafka, they would lose the positions. But anytime there's a tumult, anytime there's a, you move from here you have a shteller, but you're going to go into Eretz Yisrael now, I don't know what's going to happen. It's too unpredictable. Let's just stay right where we are. Better the mats of the status quo. Let's not rattle the status quo. So Mimela Moshe Rabbeinu knows, the Meraglim see that's clearly, that they know that's inappropriate, and that type of Yetzirah is much easier to overcome. But when it's disguised as a mitzvah, and it's much more subtle, Koyoshiach HaMeatzas Meraglim, that's a very dangerous thing. Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned about his Talmud Yeshua, that he's going to be swept up. He's going to be swept up because he might interpret it himself as doing a mitzvah to keep the Rebbe out of Eretz Yisrael. I had a bacher once at Or Sameach, he told me, he was staying in somebody's house for Shabbos. Staying with a young couple for Shabbos. So at 5 o'clock Shabbos morning, he gets up, and he has to use the restroom. So he goes to the door, tries to open the door of his room. The door is locked from the outside. Starts pulling on the door, starts knocking quietly, and he's waiting. No answer. Starts knocking, he's getting uncomfortable. 6 o'clock, still standing there by the door. Getting more uncomfortable, 7 o'clock. Right, waited there for 3 hours. It was such a fine bacher. I remember thinking to myself, if it was me, I would have broken down the door. I remember the bacher is such a refined boy. He said to me, I said to him, what did you do? He says, what can I do? I just very, very timid. He says, what can I do? At 8 o'clock, he hears an unlocking. Click, door's unlocked. What happened? Staying with a young couple. And the young couple, the Balabas wanted to go daven at the Nate's Minyan. But there's a problem over here, because then if he goes to the Nate's Minyan, so it's a problem of Yichud. His wife is in the house with the guests. So what's the logical thing to do, obviously? Incarcerate your guest in the room. Lock him in the room for 3 hours. What could be more logical? Right? That's when a person's going to do a mitzvah, a person has to be very, very careful. On the way to do the mitzvah, a person has to be very, very careful. In Mele, Moshe Rabbeinu understands they got a mitzvah deception over here. Yeshua has to be, what do you call it? Yeshua has to be a special tefillah for Yeshua. The Targum, I think, Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel says, Kad choma Moshe an visanuse. When Moshe saw the humility of Yeshua, that's when Moshe got nervous. Moshe got nervous when he saw the humility of Yeshua, because the humility of Yeshua, Moshe felt that Yeshua might be put in a position when the rest, when the Meraglim, when they start presenting their argument, so out of his humility, he'll be mevatel das to the Meraglim. And Mele, Moshe Rabbeinu needs to say a special tefillah on Yeshua. That's as far as Yeshua goes. They had a meeting once in the United States. They had a meeting of the Moetzes Chachmei HaTorah. They had to decide something. Just shortly after Aaron Cutler was nifter, they were sitting in the room, and they were debating back and forth. And Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal was the Anov Mikol Odom. At a certain point, Rav Moshe Feinstein stood up and he said, before Rav Aaron was nifter, he said, I'm going to be the manhig. This is what I think we should do, and therefore this is what we're going to do. Meeting adjourned. So, people wonder, that this is the Anov Mikol Odom. The answer is, it's not a stira. It's not a contradiction. If Rabbi Yosef says at the end of Sota, the last daf of Sota, when the Gemara says, when Rebbe died, humility died with him, and Rabbi Yosef says, it's not true, I'm still here. Rabbi Yosef says, I'm still here, the humility didn't die. If I'm still here, there's no humility. No, Anova didn't die. It seems to be a stira. What it seems to be a contradiction, Mineyube. Somebody walks around saying, nobody is as humble as me. I mean, think about that. Think of the irony of the statement. The answer is not a contradiction. And in fact, that Moshe, he's an onov. Yeshua's an onov. That doesn't mean being mevatel your das in a situation where there are people around you who may be up to no good. question that I had for a long time, you know, some people say this bothered me for many years. It didn't bother me. I can't say I lost sleep over it. Halavai, I should have been able to say, yes, it bothered me. I'm just going to sleep over it. I had two questions that I finally saw answers for. First question is, in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Chav Gimel, when it describes what the Rabbi Yevoa Nachal Eshkol Veichus Hamishom Zemor Veshkol Anovim Echad Veisidu Vavishtayim Umina Rimonim Umina Te'enim. Why didn't they bring them? They brought from Zayin Mina. And why didn't they bring olives and dates? It says they brought grapes, and it says they brought, what do you call it? They brought pomegranates, and they brought, figs. So why not olives and dates? Why didn't they bring olives and dates? Why not the olives and dates? So I didn't know. I stopped quite, okay, so the bullshit answer is they didn't have anybody to carry it. They only had 12 people. They could only take what you got, and you can't carry it. Okay. I saw Chassam Sofer, amazing Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says that the mon had the taste of olives and dates. The mon tastes like katzapichis midvash. The dvash is dvash dvorim. It's date honey. And oil. So you got the oil and you've got the dates in the mon. What was their motivation in bringing back the big fruit? I mean, remember, Rabosai, you know, we come to the table, you bring, put a watermelon on the table. Everybody takes a piece of watermelon. Those days, the grape. One man's carrying one grape. You know, one man's carrying one pomegranate, one fig. You know, take a piece of grape. You know, you cut a grape and hand the grape around the table. Take eight men. What was it? The different cheshbonos. How many men carry the grape? So take it. Come in. You put a grape on the table. I'll have a piece of grape, right? And then nobody tells you not to eat the peel either. You can eat the peel too. Better than watermelon. So yeah, over here. Okay. So practically, they didn't have hands to carry it back. It's not enough. Says the Chassam Sofer. What was their purpose? What was the motivation of bringing back this huge, this big fruit? To show the people, to scare the people off. They listen, we're going in, we're going to bring back this fruit. I mean, look at the, if this is the, this is their grapes, imagine what their watermelon must look like, imagine what the people look like. So they're going to scare the people. But the hashpah, where did the grapes go? Why did they grow so big? They grew so big because there's a hashpah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts a special bracha in those grapes and in those figs. Oh, but the bracha for the dates and the dates and the olives, says the Chassam Sofer, that hashpa of bracha already went into the mon. That's why the mon had the tzapichis bidvash. Mimela, the big fruit in Eretz Yisrael, didn't have the dates and the fig, the dates and the olives, didn't have that hashpa because it was already taken up from in the mon. Mimela, they weren't big. Mimela, they were not a use to the baraglim. To the contrary, they work against them because they're very normal looking. Mimela, they didn't bring back the dates and the olives. That's what the Chassam Sofer says. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets upset, Kaviyochel, and he says the punishment is going to be Yom Lashon. Yom Lashon. So, you know, they're going to be 40 years in the desert. Yom Lashon, Yom Lashon. What's the obvious question? I'm just talking, this is just an obvious question. What should it say? Shana Leon. Why does it say Yom Lashon? It says Yom Lashon, Yom Lashon. I've always wondered about that. I find it so very, just a Chattis Pasha. Yom Lashon means they're going to die one day out of every year for 40 years. They're going to die. Yom Lashana, Chazal say they dug the graves, 15,000 people went in. Yom Lashana, one day out of the year. That's taka the punishment. That's the Yom Lashana. By the way, people ask by Yosef Atzadik. Yosef Atzadik gets an extra 2 years when he's in prison. Why does Yosef Atzadik get 2 years for asking the Sarah Mashkim? Right? He says, you should remember me. And he gets an extra 2 years in prison. Why does he get an extra 2 years in prison? First of all, they always ask the question, well, what's wrong with the Ishtadlus? So the answer, Yosef, it is Madrega, should it be? It's a difficult answer because Ishtadlus, you see, Yaakov Avinu made Ishtadlus with its own. What's wrong with Ishtadlus? Ishtadlus is fine. What is it? Why? So the answer is, I heard an answer once, a Gevaldic answer. What happened to Yosef Atzadik? Yosef Atzadik is going to leave prison in 3 days. He says to the Saramashkin 3 days before he's leaving, he says to the Saramashkim, do me a favor, when you get out of prison, please remember me. Is there anything wrong with asking him to remember him? No. If it was 5 minutes before he left and nothing happened to you up until that point, you could say to the Saramashkim, do me a favor, you're on your way to Paro, please mention me to Paro. Nothing wrong with that. Why did Yosef preempt it by 2 days? You could ask him on the last day. Why did you preempt it by 2 days? That means when you say 3 days before he leaves and you say, please remember me, what you're really saying is, nothing's going to happen between now and 3 days from now. Oh, you preempted by 2 days, Yosef. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes Yom Lashana. Yom Lashana? Immediately he gets 2 extra years in prison. The flaw was the 2 days. The flaw wasn't asking him. Okay. So the Meraglim get a plague. What's the plague? They get toloim. Get toloim on the tongue. The tongue stretches down and it goes down to the tabur. The tibur, I mean, the worms crawl in and the worms crawl out. Chazal say they were kofir v'ikar. They're kofir v'ikar. I mean, the tongue's obviously on the tongue. That's the lashon hara. But they were kofir v'ikar. So why are they getting the punishment? Why is the punishment for the lashon hara? Why isn't the punishment for the kfira? Okay, so Chazal say, if somebody speaks lashon hara, it's ki'ilu kofir v'ikar. Reb Moshe Feinstein says that a person who speaks lashon hara, that's a sign of hashchosa samidos. It's hashchosa in the midos. And since he's got hashchosa in the midos, what's going to happen is eventually it could lead him to kfira. And in Mele, the hashchosa samidos is what brings him there. Okay, that's what he says. Why does the tongue go down to the tabur? Why does the tongue go to the tabur? Right? It stretches in. What's the answer? Some say, Eretz Yisrael is tabur arz. He's from a pasuk in Yecheskel. Found there's a pasuk in Yecheskel that says, Yoshvei al tabur ha'oretz. They spoke about tabur. Eretz Yisrael is the center of the earth. We live in Israel, and you think that there's nothing else in the world. When you live in Israel and you go to Chutz La'aretz, you're just wondering, isn't everybody just focused on Israel? You know, and you find Israel somewhere on the back page. Nobody's concerned in Israel. You know, and I'm not talking about the Jews. I'm talking about the others. But Eretz Yisrael seems to be, you know, with all that's going on with our neighbors around us in Israel, you know, every country around us turned into a butcher shop over there. Yet the only problem the world has is somebody builds an extra merpeset in Ramat Shlomo. Now the world goes berserk. They're doing beer chametz in Syria, and they're doing all over the place. And in Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden somebody built a merpeset. You know, everybody's up in there. Tabur Haaretz. It's a completely disproportionate focus on Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that we all know. So, but why toloim? So, I think the pshat is like this, and I have a raya from something else, from a medrash to Yalkut. When a worm comes along, a worm does something. I mean, isn't it strange, or both sides, isn't it strange? We learn from here what a minyan is. We learn from the Meraglim a minyan. Chazal Darshan, an Eda is 10 people. Let's go to minyan, everybody. Yeah, let's be just like the Meraglim. I mean, you know, couldn't we come up with something else? There are other groups we could compare. That's where we learn. Isn't that a strange thing? For people who ended up dying of a plague speaking Lashon Hara, that's our minyan in Shul. That's where we learn you need 10 men for a minyan. That's a bit of mandazach, though. Why do we learn it from there? So I think the pshat is like this. Why do they get punished by the worms? So let's go a step further. There's a pasuk that says, "Anochi tolas velo ish," and the Medrash the Yalkut says, "Klal Yisrael is compared to a worm." David Amel says, "Anochi tolas velo ish," and the Medrash the Yalkut says, "Klal Yisrael is compared to a worm." Ma tolazu en kocha ela befiv, ka Klal Yisrael en kocham ela befe. The koch of Klal Yisrael is in the mouth. What does that mean? So imagine you have a little worm, and the worm starts gnawing away at a tree. Tree rots, it's because worms are gnawing away at it. Is there any damage that the worm could do to the tree? How much damage could a worm do to a tree already? But if you take a whole bunch of worms, a whole bunch of worms are devastating. Eventually the tree rots, the tree could collapse. The Meraglim come in, let's say it would have been one man goes to Eretz Yisrael and he starts spreading rumors about Eretz Yisrael. He spread rumors about Eretz Yisrael, okay, there's somebody to contradict you, it's not the end of the world, that's so terrible, don't make a big fuss out of it. Oh, but what happens when a group of people comes? A group of people comes, the damage is not 1 plus 1, the damage is exponential. Now you've got 10 chashuva people talking bad about Eretz Yisrael. That creates much more of an impact in the Lashon Hara you're speaking. And in Mele, that is going to discourage the people. What's the punishment? Your punishment is worms. Because the same way that one worm doesn't do that much damage, but a lot of worms together, they perpetrate much more damage. So the Medrash the Yalkut says like this: Klal Yisrael is compared to a worm. What's it got to do with tefillah? What are we learning tefillah from the Meraglim for? The answer is we're not learning from their behavior, but we're learning what the koach of tefillah is: a yochid who davens versus a tzibur who davens. The potency of his tefillah grows exponentially. It's not 1 times 10. The Yochid davens with the Tzibur, the koach of the Tzibur creates a completely different essence of his tefillah. It's a completely different tefillah, because he is now part of the Tzibur. When David HaMelech says, Anochi Talaz Veloish, it's a remarkable thing I heard once from Rav Tzvi Weber in Eretz Yisrael. I'm the big poskim in Eretz Yisrael. I said like this. We daven all the time. I think that it's a standard human condition. I had a guy once in Yeshiva, he said to me, Rebbe, every time I daven, the opposite happens. He wanted to tell me that they don't see any results from his tefillah. He said, everything I daven, the opposite happens. So my first reaction was, okay, so daven at the stock market should drop drastically. I don't know, but just let me know the day before you daven, so I'll know where to invest. Tell me which stocks you're davening should drop drastically. So I said to him, first of all, no, it doesn't. Like, no, it doesn't. Everything I daven for, the opposite happens. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Number one. Number two, when a person davens, we do feel, daven, everybody, I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that has something that they need, or something at least that they want very much. The line between wanting and needing is a very fine line. You know, your wife feels she needs a couch, you feel she wants a new couch. You know, there's a big difference over where's want and where is need. So I told you once, I think women think that communication means agreeing with them. Right, so your wife says, I think we should get a new couch. And the husband says, nah, I'm not so sure. And the wife says, I don't think, we're just not communicating. You know, I thought that was very good communication. You know, you said yes, I said no. What can be clearer? You know, we're not communicating. Communication means when you agree with it, that means you are communicating. So a person understands that when we daven, sometimes, you know, you daven, you have a tzor, a person says a tzor, a person says a tzor, a person says they want, we daven, don't see a response. Daven, we don't see a response. Daven, I'm davening, my kishka's out, my lips are turning blue, I don't see the response. When a worm eats away at a tree, if you took a look at one worm, and a worm takes a bite out of the tree, would you notice any perceptible difference in the tree? There's no perceptible difference. Yet there must be something happening, because when you have all these worms eating the tree, even though each individual one, every bite they take, you don't see it perceptibly, but eventually the tree rots. So it must be something's happening on each time they take the bite. Otherwise, if nothing happened on the first bite, so nothing would happen on the second bite either, because that becomes the first bite. So something micro particle must be going each time the worm takes a bite. Oh, that's what happens to koach tefillah. When a person, Anochi Tola Klai Yisrael, compared to a worm, every time every Jew davens, something is happening. Maybe we don't see it. Maybe we don't see it immediately. Maybe we don't see the tangible results the way we want to see them, as soon as we want to see them. But every time a Jew davens, there's something that's happening, just like a worm. And Ein Kocham Ela Befeh means that the Koch Klai Yisrael is only in the Peh. It's only, everything else is an illusion, everything else is a deception. The koach of Klal Yisrael is in the peh, and just like when a worm davens, and cumulatively there is an effect that becomes visible, every one of our tefillahs has an effect, and every one of our tefillahs is added on cumulatively to the other tefillahs, until a person gets the response that they're looking for.